So in this beautiful text called Kaivalya Upanishad, which teaches us about the oneness, there is only one reality. And through this text, it will make us very clear as to what is the nature of this reality and how can I reach it, how can I approach it. I think if this Upanishad alone one were to study completely and carefully, there would be no questions left about meditation, about God, about Brahman. It's a short Upanishad, but very profound. And it's one of my favorite. I actually memorized most of it. I can actually chant it, so I enjoy that. So the setting is that all these Upanishads were a dialogue between a student and a teacher. And as we heard last week, the student is Ashvalayana. He's not an ordinary student. He's a very advanced student, has already studied the scriptures. In fact, he had actually composed many of the mantras, the hymns in the Rig Veda. So he was a very advanced student and himself had been teaching others. But he needed that final experience of that reality. Sometimes we need a guru to take us through that final step. And so he approaches Brahmaji, the creator. Now, when we say creator, it is different from Brahman. See, Brahman is the totality, the total substratum of the universe, which supports everything and which expresses as this universe. But that same Brahman, when expressing through Maya or nature or the creative power, becomes the creator, sustainer, destroyer. So that one consciousness for functioning through the creative power becomes the creator, sustainer, and destroyer. So that is a modification, not truly a modification, but a manifestation of that total reality, which we call as God, generator, organizer, destroyer. So the creator who has created this whole universe is the teacher. And the student approaches the creator and asks him the question. Last week we said that teach me that highest knowledge which is sought by good people. Good people of the world want to learn this knowledge. And knowing that knowledge, I will go beyond all sins. I will be able to overcome my vasanas, all my selfish desires, my vasanas, my tendencies. And I will know that highest Purusha, the Om, the consciousness. I can know that. So he is asking a very specific question. And that is most of the Upanishads, most of the situations are once a student has asked a genuine question to the teacher, then his job is over. And now the teacher has to satisfy the doubt. He has to teach whatever the student has asked. If the student is genuine, sincere, has prepared himself. So that is why when we approach a teacher, we should know what to ask. And we should ask genuine. And it is good to ask. I'm not saying that one shouldn't ask when Swamiji comes and all. It is always good because they're able to clear our doubts. And so once the student has asked, his job is over. And that's what we'll find, that the teacher now takes over. So his answer initially is very short. We'll read verse number 2, page 12. Tasmai sa hovacha pitamahascha shraddha bhakti Dhyana Yogat Avaihi. So he says, Tasmai, to that student, Sa, who, that, him, he means that teacher, he, Ovach, he spoke, very clearly he spoke, who, Pitamaha, Pitamaha means the great-grandfather. So in our family, see, suppose there is a father, there is a grandfather, and then there is a great-grandfather. So the great-grandfather is the most senior, right? There is nobody beyond him because everybody else has passed away. Or some of us are grandparents, so our parents are great-grandparents. So when he calls him the great-grandfather, what he means is that he is the original creator of this universe. There is nobody older than him. Because the creator appeared first, and then from him, then he took the five elements, air, space, fire, water, earth, and created this whole universe all the way to the furthest stars and everything that we see, heaven, hell, everything was created by the creator. So he is called the great grandfather, means he is the first one. So the first individual, the first great grandfather, what did he say? Shraddha, Bhakti, Dhyana. Three things. Shraddha is faith, Bhakti is devotion or love, and Dhyana is meditation. So he said three things you have to do. You have to have faith, you have to have love, and you have to meditate. And yoga. Yoga, some people split it as separately. That, you know, do the yoga, do the spiritual practices, you know, sit standing on one leg and doing all those asanas and pranayama. Some people take yoga as the science. So the science of faith, of devotion and meditation, you do that. Or other one is yoga also means attached to the higher. So your faith and your love and your meditation should be for the higher. Either way you look at it, the yoga is an additional word. What it means is that the three things you need to practice. Yoga also means applying in your life. So three things you need to do: faith, devotion or love, and meditation, avaihi. That's how you will learn. So this is like the initial instruction. It's like he's laying a groundwork for what he is going to tell in the next several verses. So let us spend a little bit time studying about these three things. What is faith? What is love? And what is meditation? Meditation, I'll talk about that later. So anyway, so when we say Shraddha or faith, immediately we think of it being as blind faith. You know, teacher said, so I have to just blindly believe it. Or it's written in the scriptures, so I blindly believe it. I don't question. But interestingly, Shankaracharya in his teachings says that what is Shraddha? Shraddha is understanding clearly the clear import of what is in the scriptures as they are interpreted by the guru. So Shraddha is not only a faith, but it's an intellectual activity. It's an activity of the intellect. What it means that I study the scriptures or I listen to a guru who has like interpreted, like Swami Chinmayananda has interpreted the Kaivalya Upanishad. We are not able to understand it directly. Then I clearly understand the import, not only what is superficially told by the teacher, because the teacher is expressing something which cannot be expressed in words. The nature of God or Brahman and the path to reach him and the goal to be reached is very subtle, is very obtuse, is not very straightforward, and cannot be explained in English or Sanskrit or Greek or Latin or Hebrew. Neither the Bible nor the Quran nor the Upanishads nor the Gita, none of them can approach that. And if you talk to most of the spiritual masters who have encountered this truth, who have realized this truth, they say the words cannot express it. But why are they still composing the scriptures? These are indicators using which you can reach that highest. These indicators will tell you how to approach that. So they will give you a path, and it is up to us to apply that in our life, to practice it and to reach it. So you have to understand what the teacher is indicating, not only what he or she is saying with his lips or with his mouth, but what is it that, because the teaching is coming from within, from experience, from understanding, from realization. So what is that which is indicated? That has to be understood. And faith has to be in five things. When we say faith, so first of all, you have faith in the scriptures, in the teaching, and then try to understand it. But without the right faith, your knowledge will not be very good. So the first faith is in God, that there is God. You know, we say, oh, I believe in God. Yes, but who is this God? What is his nature? Where does he live? and how can I reach him, and he can be reached. See, it's not an impossible path. You say, oh my God, some people say it might going to take me multiple lifetimes or so many years. But there are so many great saints and prophets who have reached Jesus and Buddha and Shankaracharya and Swami Chinmayananda and, you know, so many of the other gurus and teachers that we meet, Swami Tejomayananda who just came. So these teachers have reached that highest. So God is somebody that is the sustainer, creator of this universe, created me, and I can know him. He can be known. Not I can know him, he can be known. Let us start out with that. Just as others knew him, so somebody knew him, so it's not something that cannot be known. Then the faith in the scriptures. Scriptures are a means of knowledge. What do we mean by means of knowledge? You need to have the right means of knowledge. Now suppose I ask you, what is the color of this tablecloth? Right? What do you use? You use your eyes. But I say, no, I don't want to use my eyes. Let me touch and see what the color is. You will laugh at me, right? With my touch, I cannot tell. Or let me taste the tablecloth. Maybe then I can tell what the color is. People will think I'm stupid. Why? Because the right thing to do is use your eyes. Just as what I'm saying right now, you cannot taste it, you cannot smell it, you cannot see the sound waves, but you can hear it. So hearing is the means for sound. Seeing is the right means for color and form. Smelling, you know, if there is a, you know, beautiful perfume or a flower, so the nose is the means. So you need to have the right means of knowledge to know it. You cannot use a different kind of means. So what is the means of knowledge to know God, to reach him? They are the scriptures, and especially the Upanishads, because they are the highest knowledge and very directly, clearly tell you about the nature of Brahman, the nature of God. So it is the direct means of knowledge. So having faith. But sometimes the means of knowledge may be superseded by a higher means. Like say, I see the sun. You say, what do you see? You see the sun rising in the east and then traveling over the, you know, sky and then setting in the west. So you say, okay, the earth was stationary, the sun moved. But Galileo and Copernicus and all the scientists tell us the sun is stationary, the earth rotates around the sun and gives us the appearance of day and night and gives us the appearance of the various seasons, you know, as it gets closer and forth. So similarly, our experience of this world is through our eyes. So we say, whatever I see, I believe. Somebody says, you know, they tell you something, you say, I don't believe it. Unless I see it with my own eyes, I won't believe it. Especially if he's telling you something that is does not seem true. So we see this world with our eyes, but the scriptures are the higher means that even what you are seeing with your eyes is not the ultimate truth. Even what you are hearing, what you are smelling, you need to go beyond what you can see, what you can hear, what you can smell and taste. So that is the scriptures. The other means of the next, I should have faith in the guru, in the teacher. And people say, first of all, you know, how do I find a guru? People always say, you know, do we need a living guru? I think somebody asked last week, or can we have a guru who is passed away? So, and how do I find a guru? That's always a question. So what the scriptures tell us that if your search is genuine, if your faith is strong, if you really have a strong desire, the guru will appear in your life. You will find somebody who will teach you, give you the highest knowledge. All we have to do is keep our mind ready. So having faith in the teacher, that once we have found the right kind of teacher, then instead of switching from one to the other, hold on to the feet of that teacher and learn completely and totally from that teacher. Talking about teacher, there is a very beautiful story which I can tell today about Yajnavalkya. Yajnavalkya was a great sage, was a great scholar. And not only that, but he was a teacher. He used to teach, hundreds of students would come and study from him. And he had actually built a huge university, you know, where he would teach students. There was like a residential university. People would come and study, stay there. And so that soon, it started out as a small, you know, school, but then ultimately grew into a big institution where there were hundreds of students staying and studying and all the subjects, and even the highest, you know, the spirituality and everything was being taught there. And he had two wives, Katyayini and Maitreyi. So these were his two wives. And ultimately, they came to a stage where he had, you know, wanted to retire. He had passed, you know, 65 or 70. And he said, look, I'm tired of running this institution. Let other people run it. I want to go to the forest and meditate. You know, I have maybe 5, 10, 15 years left. Why should I waste my time in all this? I'm going to go and meditate. I'm going to leave everything, take sannyas, as we'd say. So he was ready to go, but he had to distribute because that property was worth a lot, you know, probably, you know, hundreds of thousands of, you know, rupees or whatever, lot of money. So he told his two wives that I'll distribute it equally between the two of you. You will be the owners, and then you can find somebody to run it. You know, my students and my assistants and all will run the place, but both of you will be the owners. So the first wife, Katyayini, said, that's, you know, I'm sorry you're going, but at least, you know, I'm well taken care of. So she was fine. She said, okay, you know, if that's what you want, you know, I know, because it was a custom in India in those days that after certain years, people would go to the forest, meditate, and then give up that body in pursuit of the highest. But the second wife, Maitreyi, was a little bit smarter. So she said, you're leaving all this? You've spent your whole lifetime building? He said, yeah. So she said, you must be leaving it for something better, right? We don't leave something good for something worse. When you leave something, you're always, yeah. He says, yeah, it is for something better. So she says, but you want me to be satisfied with half of what you are leaving? So, well, you know, isn't it plenty? She said, okay, tell me one thing. This half of this university you are giving me, and I know it's worth a lot of money, but will it buy me immortality? Will it make me immortal? Now, what is immortality? We'll talk about later on next week. But basically, immortality does not mean living forever in this body, but realizing my immortal nature. That is immortality. We'll talk more in detail about that next week. So she said, will this buy me immortality? He said, no. You know, this will end. One day your body will end and this, you know, university, you know, you're not going to be owning it forever. So she said, I don't want this. He said, what do you want? She said, I want what you are going to look for. What are you going to search for? I need that. So he says, you cannot come with me because sannyas means I have to give up my wife and everything. She says, okay, then why don't you teach me before you go, what is it that you are seeking? And so the Yajnavalkya teaches his wife. The Upanishad is called Brihadaranyaka Upanishad. It's a very huge Upanishad and has a lot of information. And he sits down and teaches his wife, you know, patiently. She asks questions and he answers that. Very beautifully, the Upanishad is available in the office very, very well. The student, she studies from him. And after he has done, she says, thank you very much. Oh Lord, you know, my husband, thank you so much. Now you can go. And so he then takes leave of her, and then she obviously has no interest in running that university. She also becomes a monk, becomes a renunciate. She doesn't follow her husband, but she remains in the town, but just begging, you know, for food from people and teaching. She becomes a teacher, whatever she has studied from her husband, and she obviously had read before here. It was not the first time. Otherwise, he wouldn't be giving her the highest knowledge. She already had a lot of knowledge. And she got more from her husband and she becomes a great teacher. In fact, she herself composed an Upanishad called Maitreyi Upanishad, which again has the highest truth. And she spent the rest of her life, you know, as a renunciate, as a monk, learning and teaching others in the town and in the surrounding areas, and became a great teacher herself. So that kind of devotion we need to have for our guru, that whatever he has said, I will apply, I will put in my life, I will practice, then only our growth will be good. The fourth is faith in myself. I must have faith in myself that just as Christ could reach, Buddha could reach, Shankaracharya could reach, Swami Chinmayananda could reach, I can also reach. I'm also as much a human as them. God is in me, as Om is in me as much as it is in the rest of us. So why can't I know him? Why can't I reach? Why can't I understand? So faith in myself, faith in my ability to learn, you know, that I should have confidence. I shouldn't say, it's too tough. I don't think I can get it, you know, I forget it, it's too hard. No, I can do it. I must have confidence, I must have faith. And the fifth one is the willingness to apply that. Whatever the teacher has told me, my willingness to apply that, to practice it, to learn it. So the ability to practice and apply what I have learned from the teacher. So that is the aspect of faith. So when you have these five, then you are ready to study the scriptures. The next he talks about bhakti. Bhakti is devotion or love. Love, you know, we know love very well. That we all know. You know, we love our children, we love our spouse, we love our job, we love our dog, we love our house, our car, you know, all those things we love. But transferring that love to something higher is called bhakti or called devotion. Love for an object in the world is good. But when that love is transferred to God, to somebody higher, and for that, there are two things are very important in love. First of all, love is a function of the heart. And we all know that. You know, you don't love somebody with your brain. Sometimes, you know, people fall in love and it's so irrational. And the parents are telling the daughter, you know, why do you love this man? You know, he has nothing. He's a bum. He has no job. She said, no, Dad, I love him. You know, there's no ration. There's no intellect. And the parents cannot understand that. So love is a function of the heart. And there are two factors in love. One is the willingness to sacrifice. I'm ready to sacrifice anything to get this knowledge. Once I start on this path, no matter what I have to sacrifice, no matter what I have to give up, this is for me the number one. And the total identification means total oneness. That for, like a person I love, now for when you truly love, and she gives you a job to do, or he gives you, you finish it, and then you say, is there anything more I can do? It's not enough. It's never that I finished the work, you know, let me get it over with. No, I'm doing it for my beloved. And no matter how much work she gives me, or like a mother cooking for her children, how much love is there? Does she feel it is a burden or it is a bother? You know, why do I have to cook every day for these rascals? They don't even appreciate. No, whether they appreciate or not, the mother has total identification and total willingness to sacrifice. So that kind of identification with God, that kind of willingness to sacrifice, that for this path, for Him, I am ready to do anything. Again, when I do something for God, it's not that He needs my work or He needs my service. By doing His work, I become closer to Him. I become more purified. My heart becomes pure. I become more unselfish. So the willingness to sacrifice and the willingness to identify, total oneness is love. A mother doesn't think herself to be separate from her children. They are part of me. They are me. So that kind of love that we have for our child or for our, that kind of love we should have for God. Talking about love, this man took his daughter, you know, to the toy store and she wanted to buy a Barbie. So he says, how much is this beach Barbie? You know, beach Barbie in a swimsuit. He said, $19.95. How much is the, you know, party, Barbie going to a party, you know, for a ball dressed up, $19.95. Barbie going to work, you know, in a business, how much is that? $19.95. Everything is $19.95. And then there's a fourth Barbie. It says divorced Barbie. So how much is that? He says $265. He says, what? Everything else is $19.95. Why is she $265? It says, because that Barbie comes with Ken's house and Ken's car and Ken's furniture. So, that's why that Barbie is worth a lot. So total love, total identification and willingness to sacrifice is called bhakti. It's called devotion. And devotion is for the higher that I... And then also the idea that just as a mother thinks her child and me are one, so for me to think that God and I are one, God is everywhere and everything is Him. And so I am not separate from Him. We are actually never separate. The fact that I'm speaking, the fact that you are listening, God is functioning through us. But we always think of him being separate. So that total identification and total willingness to sacrifice and the total love, constantly, just as a teacher, just as a person, when they first fall in love, that is, of course, before they get married. But when they first fall in love, how they constantly think about each other, and the, you know, girl may be somewhere and the boy may be somewhere, and he's thinking, you know, what is my beloved doing at this time? What must she be doing? She must be just waking up. Maybe she's, you know, having her breakfast. All the time thinking. So that kind of thinking about God should be constant, constant remembrance. And the third is meditation. Meditation I won't talk too much about, because this whole book is going to talk about meditation. The entire textbook is on meditation. So, and most of us have been meditating, so I won't talk too much in detail today, because we'll be doing over the next few weeks. But basically, meditation is a function of intellect and mind both. Shraddha is with the intellect, bhakti is with the heart. When the intellect and the heart, the intellect and the mind, when they together work in one direction, Swamiji in his commentary says, the force comes up which is called intuition. Intuition is that which takes us beyond even the intellect. The intellect cannot understand it, but when the intellect combines with the heart, even in the world, if you want to succeed in something, like you want to be a great basketball player, it's not only important to have the mechanics, you know, somebody, a coach comes and teaches you how to throw the ball, how to dribble, but I have to have love for the game. If I don't have love for the game, no matter how much my coach teaches me, I won't be a great basketball player. Same thing for a great physicist or a chemist or a botanist or an engineer. They, not only they have to know the science, but they have to love it. So when the mind and heart are together, involved, and the intellect, then you go beyond the intellect. So in meditation, what we do is we quieten the mind and go beyond the mind, and we'll be talking in more detail in the next few weeks. And the most important thing in meditation is listen again and again, again and again. Even though what we are saying is, has been said before, is nothing new, but Shravanam, again and again listening. That's why we have all these wonderful teachers who come. And you may think, you know, they're talking the same thing, but repeated listening, sometimes something will click. The first listening, second listening may not be clear, but as you listen 4, 5, 6, 7 times, things will become clearer. You know, I have been attending these classes for, you know, at least regularly for about 25 years. And still, every time I listen to Swami Ishwarananda or Vimalji or all these wonderful teachers, you always learn something new. You come up with good ideas. So this is basically the essence of this verse, that intellectually know, love with your heart, and then together when they combine, you meditate. So that is the essence of this particular verse. And as I said, meditation will go in more detail next week and the subsequent weeks. The next 2 or 3 weeks we'll be doing a very beautiful prayer which we chant whenever a great saint or a sage comes to our mission. We always chant that, those mantras we always chant. So we'll be studying about those in the next 2 weeks or so. So any questions or comments about what we have spoken today?
So we are, I'm still lost. Mm-hmm. I mean, I'm trying.
Yeah.
It's going to take a long, long time.
Right. I think she makes an excellent point, because what happens is when we are in this class, things appear very clear. Okay, I have understood. But then soon as you walk out and you get involved in the world and you're dealing with your family and your work and all these problems, then this knowledge slowly goes in the back burner. So every time you listen again and again, it again slowly, slowly the knowledge seeps in. Initially, it's only superficial, till it goes in deep and becomes part of your inner psyche. Then, so that it, so when somebody wakes you up in the middle of the night and says, "Who are you?" The answer should not be, "I'm Anil or Julie or I am Brahman, I am Atman." That understanding, when it becomes so clear that I am that, then, so that should reverberate through your mind constantly. And with repeated listening, it will happen. It will happen. As you more and more you listen, slowly you will find that this knowledge becomes clearer and layers. It's like there are layers of ignorance, and slowly, slowly, as you listen to these teachers and to the literature, that will be wiped. Yeah, that's a good point. Thank you. Because the world has a very powerful attraction and we forget. And so listening and then reading these books and then thinking about them, listening to these talks again, listening to other teachers, you know, will definitely help. Yes. Thank you.
I think it's very important to someone's in someone's life.
Mm-hmm.
Because there's so much stress out there.
Right.
You know, but yeah, that was I'm learning.
It's very good. Yeah, just keep doing that, and that will become, you know, more permanent, the peace and the silence. But do not look for that same experience.
Yeah.
See, do not say, I want to reproduce. Then again, you are sitting with a desire. You are with a desire that I am that, and then rest will happen by itself. And when it happens, that's good. If it doesn't happen, it's still good.
Yeah.
But that's good. You know, that shows that, you know, you are going deep into it, and that's very nice.
I mean, I know I got a long ways to go, but...
Mm-hmm. Actually, all of us say long way to go, but I am that is the closest thing to me. To realize I am that, it's me. So even though I myself say it's a long way to go, but the teachers tell you that once you have read properly and listened again and again, then, you know, the teacher says that thou art, you are that. It takes 3 seconds. Actually, there's not a long way, it's only 3 seconds. You are that. I am that. How long does it take? 3 seconds. So actually, knowledge can be obtained in 3 seconds, but why we come to this class? For listening again and again. And then ultimately, that knowledge will become clear. I am that. Right now, I'm saying it, then eventually, I will feel it. I will wake up to that. That is the only. So it's not far away to go. It's just the distance is in our mind. Actually, it's not. Because how long does it take you to realize you are Jesse? Right?
That's right.
So that's how long it should take you to realize who you are. But you're right. You know, we have still a lot of vasanas. We have a lot of desires. So that through the knowledge and through meditation and through service, you will reduce these. And as you reduce, the Om inside will become clearer to you, will become more manifest. So the whole exercise is to purify the mind. The mind which is full of negativities, you purify, and the truth becomes manifest by itself. So we continue to meditate, and then you practice love, service, do all that, and slowly the mind will become pure. So what we have to do is purify, purify, purify. That is what is required. Purify the mind, and then continue to practice. That's what he said, Shraddha, Bhakti, Dhyana, Yogat. By application of Shraddha, Bhakti and Dhyan, by application of these three, you will know. That's what the teacher has told today. Meditation is a combination of knowledge and love. The God that I have heard about in the scriptures, the one whom I love, who is my creator and sustainer. That same all-pervading consciousness is in my heart as life, as consciousness, is reflected in my mind and intellect, in the core of my heart. Even though God is everywhere, you can approach Him deep in the core of your heart. That is who I am trying to reach, to know. That is who we meditate upon. Eyes softly closed. Relax the body from head to toe, and from toes back to the head. Observe your breath for a few seconds or a few minutes. Now go inward and feel that inner consciousness. That alone is, I no longer exist. That alone is me. Feel that and experience that and become one with that for the next few minutes. That alone is, I no longer exist.